Did you know the Texarkana Gazette has a newsletter for every interest? Sign up at texarkanagazette.com/newsletters to get the news you care about most delivered straight to your email box. You can find out what's happening this weekend, read the week's best feature stories, or catch up on sports scores. Try The Upside, our roundup of good news sure to put a positive spin on your week. There's even an on-the-line newsletter, so you can be sure to never miss the latest episode. And more. Visit texarkanagazette.com/newsletters to customize how you get news today. That's texarkanagazette.com/newsletters. Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Texarkana Gazette editor Les Miner is retiring next week after almost 40 years with the paper, including 35 leading its newsroom. I sat down with Les to talk about his memories and accomplishments and what it's like to leave behind the profession to which he has devoted his life. Les's successor, Gazette General Manager James Bright, joined us to talk about his vision for the paper and what readers can expect after the transition. Here's our conversation. Joining me in the studio today is Les Miner. Hi, Les.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Good. And James Bright.
Hey, man. How's it going?
All right. So we're here to talk about your retirement, Les. It's been 40 years that you've been with the Gazette. Just tell us what's on your mind as you get ready for this change.
Well, it's been actually 39 and a half.
Yeah.
So I didn't make it to 40. What's on my mind? You accumulate a lot of stuff in an office over that period of time, and you start going through desks, and you start seeing things that you'd forgotten about. So a lot of memories come flowing back through the process. But just going through that process and getting ready for what's coming next.
If it's not too personal, what does your family have to say about this?
Well, I have two teenage. I have six kids and a wife, and five grandkids, and another one on the way. So, some at the end of that list don't have anything to say about it. Right. The teenagers really aren't. I don't think they've really comprehended or thought very much of it. My wife keeps saying, "Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure?" Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure, and she's sure that I'm sure, and she's ready for it too.
What do you think you'll miss?
That's kind of an interesting question, because some of the things that I would have missed when I was, 20 years into this gig, I don't miss so much now. So it used to be the telephone ringing in the middle of the night and something was going on, something right. We had to go and report on, telephone calls that I had to make, big blow up someplace, whatever it happened to be. And, that got your juices running. That got you going. Now the phone rings in the middle of the night, and I go, what now?
Right.
is there somebody else to call? I think that's just a function of spending a lot of time doing this. And what was fun once isn't as fun for me anymore. So I think that's kind of a younger man's game. But that's really the whole idea that every day is a blank page and you get to fill it up. The whole idea that you never know what's you're going to hear on the police scanner, that who's going to call you up with a tip on this, and that you get to run with that and you get to check it out. So it's a mixed bag. I miss it. I miss looking back on it.
Right.
I don't actually miss it as much when it happens anymore.
Right. Well, you're touching on another thing I wanted to ask you, which is, how do you think this job has changed you? What's the difference between 82 less and 22 less?
Well, there's a couple of things that are probably going to run over each other. But, you know, I think you get hardened in this job. I think the less minor that walked into this job, you know, was a lot funner, was a lot softer, was a lot more introspective, you know, thought about things. But you see, some things don't really change. We just see them repackaged over and over again. I mean, there was nasty crimes in 1982. There are ugly crimes now. You know, they hurt more in 82 than they hurt now because I've seen them over and over and over again. And there's, it's just, you know, you say, well, we're fixing things. The world's getting better. I don't know. I just see things repeating themselves over and over. So I'm a little bit more callous to all that stuff than I was now. And, of course, I think the big thing that has impacted our industry is certainly the Internet, because we did a lot of things, but we did it through telephones, and we had to contact, and nobody else was doing the things that we were doing. I mean, you had three Louisiana television stations that didn't have web pages that would do one story out of Texarkana a day, and normally it was a crime story or maybe a crime story, and then they toss a feel-good story on the end, you know, but it wasn't much Texarkana news. Now anybody and their brother can be tossing out Texarkana news and do.
Right.
And everybody who are news providers throw out press releases to all these folks, you know, so and they can all put them all up. You know, the number of people actually doing original reporting in town hasn't really increased all that much over all these years, but it looks like it has.
Yeah.
So we're fighting that, and we're fighting, how you make people care about the people that go and sit in meetings and collect, you know, the news firsthand and do all the little. You know, you can't get the public to go to hardly any of these meetings. You ever go to a school board meeting or a college board meeting or a city council meeting? And for most part, I mean, there are a few issues that just really up the stakes.
Right.
But for the most part, those chairs are empty. So unless you have somebody actually going out there like us, boots on the ground, going to these things, sitting through them, then you really don't know a whole lot about what's really going on and what the follow-up questions should be.
Right. You started out as a feature writer, correct?
Well, that's true. When I came here, and I started out, but I started out in sports.
High school.
I was a sports writer, best sports writer in Kansas in 1973.
There you go.
And yearbook editor, and I was the first person in my school to carry a 35mm camera, which I thought was kind of cool. Now we've gone way beyond 35mm Tri-X 40 film cameras, but that was a big deal because the guy who took all the pictures for the yearbook before me was the principal. His name was Stan Inwood, and he had one of those big box cameras that had negatives that were about 3x5, and you couldn't shoot any motion with it.
Yeah.
There was just no way. He did really great portraits and everything, and it looked like one of those big cameras that you held up back in the old days in the 1940s with the press conferences and everything. So we moved them into the 35mm era. And, and of course, that era is gone now. That's become art. Yeah. That's become art photography now.
Right.
So that was a huge step for us at those times. So I thought I was going to be a sports writer all my life because I love sports and followed it a lot. And
to follow in Kansas.
Well, yeah, you had the Jayhawks, one of my big passions, and you have the Chiefs, I was really high on the Chiefs until they lost to Cincinnati, but, you know, that's just the way it goes. So I was intent on being sports, and it's really, I guess I'm really glad that that my life didn't go in that direction, because I think having as many children as I did, being a sports writer, being out two or three nights a week until midnight filing stories probably wouldn't have been conducive for all that.
Right.
So anyway, I went to the University of Kansas, got sidetracked there, had an automobile accident. A man died pretty pretty traumatic for me. Went into the Air Force, spent 4 years in the Air Force. Came back, went to Louisiana Tech, studied for about 2 years there, and then I got picked up by the Shreveport Journal, which was a joint operating agreement with the Shreveport Times at the time. They were the morning newspaper that still mm-hmm. exists, and Gannett didn't own them then. Maybe they did. I don't think they did, but they might have. And then we were the privately owned afternoon paper, and we shared the same building. And I was doing. They hired me as a feature writer because somebody was pregnant. Yeah. So I was filling that void while somebody was pregnant. And then they thought I was a pretty good feature writer. But the feature writer departments back then, and I say this in all loving kindness, were made up of older women.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to give up their jobs.
Sort of the society beat.
Yeah. Very, very much so back then. So I wasn't going to get a chance to go there. Sports was filled up with a very good sports staff. I was doing news. I got my feet into news then. And Texarkana was expanding at the time. And when they knew that I was going to get pushed out by the pregnancy woman coming back, a guy helped me get a job up here. And I started here on the features department, which at that time had four people in it. I was the fourth. They were expanding.
Oh, wow.
And that was 1982 in August. That was a long story.
Yeah, well, interesting, though. I just wanted to. So you've been interested in journalism ever since high school.
It's kind of, you know, one of those things. That was what I was good at. I didn't really work very hard at it, but I'll tell you this. I was a horrible, horrible, horrible speller. I could not diagram a sentence. I could not tell you what an adverb or an adjective was. And when they changed the terms for it, where you went from nouns to subjects to all the different, you know, it's like, that was all real confusing. But I had a good ear.
Yeah.
I had a good ear. Yeah. And, My uncle is a journalist, or was a journalist. He's passed a while ago. He worked for the Daily Oklahoma, and he was their Washington bureau chief up there. And his wife also worked for the Washington Post and some of the suburban papers in Washington D.C. And my cousins followed that. So we had a lot of people in our family that actually were role models that. Made a big difference in my life and at least gave me the confidence that I could do it. And I wasn't very good at some of the things that I should have been good at in high school. And I never worked really hard.
Yeah.
In fact, I was one of those guys that vacillated from almost the A honor roll to almost flunking out. It was just up and down, up and down, because, you know, I just, you know, when I did bad, I refocused and I did good. And then I did good and I stopped focusing and I did bad.
Yeah.
So, I was not teachers always talked about that, you know.
So can you remember what you had in mind when you started working here? Did you have any idea you'd be here still in 2022?
Oh, no.
Looking at it as a stepping stone or?
No, this was a stepping stone. I didn't know it at first, but let me take you back. So when I was in the Air Force, I still had my college friends were still in Kansas City, and I went up there once to visit them. I had a little Fiat 850 Spider. It was old and crumbly, but it was cool in my mind.
Yeah.
And anyway, I spent all my money up there, and I had about $8 in my pocket. And I ran out of gas in Texarkana on the way back, and I couldn't get anybody to loan me the $2 or $3, because this is a little, you know, hyper.
Yeah.
To get to Shreveport, 70 miles down the road. And it just wore me out. And I finally got somebody at a gas station to do that.
Yeah.
But I left town and I said, I am never, ever, ever coming back to Texarkana. This is not where I'm going to be. So, but then there was an opportunity. And I got here and I had a lot of success feature writing. Most of the people who knew me when I was young knew me as a feature writer and thought I was I did it pretty well. So my plan was, I was 2 years getting out of here. I was going to go to Dallas. I was going to go to Kansas City. I had conversations with both of those places, and they kept promoting me, you know.
Yeah.
And towards the end, I went from being a feature writer to an assistant feature editor to a feature editor, and I wasn't probably really doing much feature editing stuff because I really wasn't good at the editing stuff at that point because I really couldn't spell or do any of those things. And there really weren't the tools back then mm-hmm. that help you the way they do now. And I'm much better at those things now than I right. was back, you know. But anyway, so, but they found ways to give me more money. And they were having a lot of trouble about 4 years in. So I was having conversations with those places. But about 4 years in, well, hang on, let me think about this for a second. I started getting some serious conversations with some of the bigger newspapers. But the city editor and a managing editor started talking to me. And he'd take me out to lunch and ask me about news stuff. He asked me about the news staff. And they were having some problems on that staff. And I really wasn't paying a whole lot of attention because I really didn't pay any attention to news at that time.
Right.
And I really, you know, didn't care a whole lot about news at that time.
That's a lot different from what it is now, where everybody's sort of got their finger in every beat every now and then.
If I wrote 4 stories a week, you know, that was a good week for me. I had weeks that I wrote 2 or 3 stories, and they were really good stories. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had the luxury of being able to do that. So he was taking me to dinner all these times or lunches, and we'd talk about this and this. And finally, you know, I never bagged the clue. And finally he said one day to me, this is Bob Lutkin, who went on to be the managing editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette a few years later. He said, do you want to run the city desk?
Wow.
You know, and I hadn't even thought about it. I didn't even know he was interviewing me.
Right.
And, I thought about it for a while and I was single and, you know, I said, well, I can do this. You know, I can make a little bit more money. You know, I can do this for a while and then I'll figure out one of these other opportunities. So I took the job, and I didn't really know anything about it. I'd worked a little bit in news in Shreveport. I worked covering the parish beat, which is equivalent to a county beat. Mm-hmm. And so I knew a little bit, and I knew a little bit of the stuff that I'd overheard. But basically, everything I knew was just green, and I had to learn everything. But I had a good staff, and apparently I communicated pretty well with them because, so I didn't know something. We talked, you know, and they brought me up to speed and I thought about it and so it seems like that when I think about those early days, the whole thing was just a stream of conversation as they learned about me and I learned about them and I figured out what news was. And then they sent me to a few conferences and things like that to get training. I think the thing that struck me the most is the number one thing that I think we weren't doing back then that I brought to the table right there is we were going to be deeply seeped in local news.
Right.
And we were seeped in local news before, but we weren't really deeply seeped.
Right.
And if there was a big national story, that would override the local stuff. And I kind of switched that whole dynamic on there. Mm-hmm. And luckily, Texarkana is a tremendous news town. I mean, the dynamics between the two cities. Back then, there was a lot of fighting between the Arkansas side and the Texas side. And so there were things that we could naturally do. I mean, Miller County was in a mess for a while, couldn't pay their bills. The state confiscated one of their bulldozers. County confiscated one of their bulldozers and tried to hold it for ransom so that the state would pay them money that they own. But there's a quirkiness to this town that makes it really, really fun to cover.
You're getting to a Barbara Walters type question I had for you. I remember when she asked somebody what kind of tree they wanted to be.
Barbara Walters came to Texarkana.
Really?
Yeah, she came in 1992. It was when Bill Clinton and George Bush and H. Ross Perot ran for president. And that whole, H. Ross Perot, everybody knew he was a rich guy, but nobody really knew who he was. So when he announced this that he was running for president, all this national, international media swarmed into Texarkana, and I spent pretty much all that summer touring people from from Newsweek, from Japan, from just all kinds of newspapers. I had some clippings still where some of my quotes are in Japanese newspapers, and the only thing I can read them is Les Miner, which I spelled the right way.
Yeah.
But Barbara Walters came down here, yeah, and she interviewed Ross Perot at Bryce's cafeteria, yeah, which was our famous cafeteria that was downtown and then moved to the interstate. And unfortunately, it's not opened anymore. And they were right, going through the serving line, and she looked at something down there and she said, "Well, what's that?" And it was greens. And so Ross had to explain to her what greens were. And I think that goes back to kind of Texarkana as a dynamic location. We used to have a lot of political candidates who would come through here, mm-hmm, because they could hit two states at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had Dukakis who made his announcement in Texarkana. So we just had, yeah, a lot of political traffic through here over the years.
What I wanted to ask you is, fill in the blank. Texarkana is blank.
Texarkana is quirky. It's unique. It's heartfelt. It's a lot of different things. It never seems to be what everybody wants it to be. Mm. You know, it's like, well, we're gonna fix Texarkana.
Yeah.
But you know, I think you know. Yeah, we can change things. Things can get different. We can improve economic opportunities here and things like that. But it's just still a town that you gotta love because it's so different. I mean, we fought for years and years and years. And, you know, back in, I think it was 2017, we finally got beer.
Right.
On the Arkansas, Texas side of the line. Mm-hmm. And before that, you know, it was all the liquor stores lined up on State Line Avenue on the east side, and then nothing on the Texas side. And, you know, I wrote about that over the years. And there was, yeah, that was like the second or third or fourth try they had, and they finally got, yeah, it through. I said, well,
I did a whole series on that, I remember.
Yeah, you know, that was 2017, am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some real good work. But what was interesting is I didn't care about, you know, where the alcohol was. I think people who are going to drink are going to find the alcohol. But I wanted to keep the rules the way they are because it was something that kind of made Texarkana different.
Right.
Because they in the old days they said, well, all the liquor's on this side and all the prostitutes are on this side.
Yeah.
You know. So, but having this thing like this, I thought that difference was unique enough and helped one of the things that helped make us really special. And one of the other things that helped us made it special about that whole thing, it was the liquor stores on the Arkansas side funding churches on the Texas side,
right,
to keep this off the ballot,
yeah,
because they didn't want the competition from the other side of state line.
Right.
So there were just some really funny bed partners in that whole deal.
Anything you're especially proud of over your career?
Yeah, there are a few things. I think we did a really good job as a newspaper. Texarkana College was under fire many years ago. Mm-hmm. They'd blown through a bunch of money. They were getting ready to close. There were people that wanted them to close for a lot of different reasons. And it was going to take a tax. People were going to have to come and decide to pay property taxes to keep it open. Mm-hmm. And we covered everything, the controversy leading up to how all that money was lost, all the way through why we should keep this college. And we kept Texarkana College, and we got a tax increase that is very, very difficult to do in this part of the country. So I'm very pleased about that. I'm very pleased that we've been able to keep Lake Wright Patman. Marvin Nichols Reservoir from being completed. Now, I don't know if that's a game that we're going to win in the long run, mm-hmm, but it was funny because how you think of things initially and how you maybe think of them later. But I remember I went with a publisher to a meeting at the Collins Building once on some. I don't know why we were. I think they wanted to talk. I think it was like a little newspaper speech or something. Mm-hmm. And we did a little gig, and afterwards, a guy said, "Well, why aren't you guys doing anything about the big reservoir they're building up out here?" And of course, I go, "Well, what big reservoir?" And that, I mean, it really wasn't on our radar. It's just a little. Yeah. It's outside of Bowie County, but they were going to flood just a tremendous amount of land. The mitigation that goes with that was going to hurt the forestry industry. And Dallas was well on their way to actually making this thing happen. Everything was happening at a state level, so it really wasn't percolating up here very, very much. But suddenly it became a real deal, and they were pushing to get that thing done on 20 years, which probably would have been now or even earlier than this. And we've been fighting it for long, long time. You know, Dallas is growing. You know, it's hard. And the issue is, I think there are other ways and other places they can get their water from. Yeah. And for me, it's always been, what are we going to get in return? What are those landowners going to get? And what is the region going to get in return if we flood all that land and do this thing? And they've never given me really what I consider an adequate answer.
Well, we'll keep covering it, which brings me to James.
Yes.
You're going to be taking over as editor. Just for people who may not have met you yet, you've been in town how long now?
It'll be 3 years tomorrow, okay. Which is February 22nd when we're recording this.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I actually came up on the editorial side. Which is somewhat unique for a operator. Unlike Les, I wasn't naturally gifted with journalism. You know, when I was growing up, I knew I wanted to be a writer. And I was in college, and I wandered into my student newspaper and, you know, was cocky and arrogant and said, you know, I want to write. You know, give me an assignment. So they did. And it was a profile, a feature, on an outgoing university president. And I wrote it, and I thought I had created, you know, the ultimate piece. It was going to do so much honor to this guy, and it'd be great. And I turned it in, it was blood dry. It was, you know, in no way AP style, nothing in the way that we write. And I was put in a place pretty quickly as far as my pecking order with even the student publication. So I had to start from scratch, which actually ended up invigorating me, and I did. And I worked my way up, and in college I started as a art scene, which feature writing editor, and then moved into managing editor, and then transferred to universities and became the editor of that publication, which was A&M Commerce, and then graduated from there and went on to become an editor of two weeklies in Rockwall County, and then stayed within that company and moved on to become a daily editor in Oklahoma. And then after a couple of years doing that, an opportunity opened where I could move into operations. My boss at the time hadn't ever looked at having a GM editor. But the opportunity was there, and I basically had a test run at it and flew to Montgomery, Alabama to run the corporate gauntlet with them. And they said, all right, let's give them a shot and see how this goes. And I did all right with it. And a year later, they offered me another publication. So I became a regional publisher. I was over two publications as the editor and publisher, and did that for about 2.5 years. And the company merged with another company, and my job was eliminated in the process. And then I kind of, you know, it spun me out. And I started looking around what I wanted to do. And I worked in lobbying for a very brief moment. And then I ended up working for in Oklahoma in a company that's located here with Healthcare Express, and built a relationship through some colleagues and some networking with my current boss. And Texarkana came open and I interviewed for it. And my wife and I really liked the town and got the opportunity. And that's how I started here.
What's going to stay the same, and what kind of changes do you have in mind for the future?
Well, so let's key on local centric news, and I think that's the bread and butter of any local community newspaper. Texarkana, as I've looked at it, is unique in the sense that it's a small metropolitan area So you have a newspaper that has to kind of skirt the line between a local community paper and being a metro newspaper. We're never going to be a metro in the sense of Little Rock or Dallas, but we certainly have people, we have readers that get the vast majority of their international and national news from the Gazette. So we have to make sure that we continue to service those readers. However, what's going to please the largest amount of our potential readership in Texarkana and really give us access to as many new subscribers as possible as local content and local content that's interesting. So we're still going to continue to produce quality local content, but we're also going to look at what readers like. You know, we're at a time in development that we can use services online and analytics to determine what actually works, what's really moving the needle, what readers want to read, and then not tailor is the wrong word, but produce content that is going to be more accessible and more interesting to readers on a day-to-day basis. We're still going to cover the P's and Q's. We're still going to cover those meetings. We're still going to go to, the city council and the school board meetings and be one of the five people that show up. But it may not be as much effort, as much resources as we previously provided. But we may dive into topics that are found there a little bit deeper and show how they'll affect Texarkanians. That will be combined with multimedia work. So you'll see more of a push of items like this, like podcasts and more video, more photo galleries, basically enhancing both the website and our digital replica. One of the things that's really unique now is I came up learning this craft when we were at the very beginning of transition from print to digital. Print was still king. Digital was in its infancy. And we never really looked at digital being an opportunity to scoop the print product. Over the course of 10 years, that's completely changed to where now we look as digital being the forefront and print being kind of riding backseat to it. And that's because we're really limited in what we can do with print. You know, once it's on there, it's got a time, it goes, and we continue to develop stories and develop ways we tell that story digitally. There's no strings on us with that. So it also gives us access to a whole much larger swath of potential readers. You know, I think it's at its height, Texarkana had 30,000 subscribers. Is that
38?
So for instance, last month we had 190,000 unique visitors to the texarkanagazette.com. And obviously not all of their subscribers, but those are people consuming our content. And so it's what we can do and the people we can reach is just far superior with our digital offerings than they were in print.
Being in charge of both the business side and the editorial side is unusual.
Yes.
How do you plan to manage that? And what would you have to say to someone who may have some concerns about that?
Well, like my previous place of employment, I, as far as I know, this is the first time, at least in recent history, that Waco, which is our parent company, has put a GM over editorial as well. The good thing is I have some experience with it, and I will always put principle over profit. That's how I've led my life. My passion is in journalism. It's will always be in journalism. It'll always be in truth-telling and providing news. And I've found that I can be creative on the business side and have enjoyed that. I've enjoyed working on the business side and being able to sell advertising and sell marketing solutions and fund the process of journalism. But ultimately, I've always placed reporting and journalism at a higher tier than making money, which is not what a lot of companies look at. You know, a lot Right. of our competitors out of larger communities don't look at their business model that way. They look at the business model of how much profit can we churn out, and that's the most important thing. Thankfully, my bosses in this company, the parent company, Waco, believes in the same process, or I probably wouldn't be in this job.
And to be clear, good journalism is good business.
It is. But reality is you're going to write stories that are going to upset potential advertisers. And, right. and that's just part of the game. We endeavor as hard as we can to get the most accurate and most objective picture of any particular story. And it's not going to please everyone. You know, it's if you're making everyone happy, you're PR, you're not journalism. So, you know, this was a few months ago, we did a reader stop survey and literally next to each other, one person wrote, "This paper is far too liberal." And then the next response was, "This paper is far too conservative."
Right.
And I sat there and looked and I said, "Man, we're doing a good job."
Yeah. And that hasn't changed in 40 years.
This goes back to this dynamic group yes. of population that, right. that you try to please everybody, but you can't.
Yeah. Confirmation bias yeah. kicks in. People see what they want to believe is true. So, Les, do you have any advice for James?
Haven't thought about that, actually. I would just say, I guess, that every day is different. Embrace it. You know, Bill Clinton, back in 1992, when he was running for president, his campaign had a slogan that was something like, "It's the economy, stupid." In other words, that's what's going to win this election, which it was. And yeah. I will say it's the news, it's the content.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, more than anything else, you got the good story. I did want to kind of hitchhike off one of the things he was saying about news and how it has to be driven by news as opposed to the business side. When I first came in, one of the first special sections we did was called Lafayette County, Third World County, because at that time, this was like my first big special section or special, not special section, but special project. And Lafayette County, which is one county over from Miller County, mm-hmm. at that time was low in everything. If it was poverty rates, education, if it was deaths and crime, and everything they had was low, low, low. And we did eight days of this.
Right.
Third World County. And they pulled all the racks out of the county. And I said, I said to myself, I don't think I'm going to keep this job very long because I was still pretty secure. But we were right. They put the racks back in at some point. And company will support you if you're doing the right thing the right way, even if it makes people mad.
Well, we love you, Les. One thing you'll always hear people say about you is that you gave them a chance. You took a chance on them. And that's my story. I had never worked for a newspaper before when you hired me. I actually had been unemployed for a couple of years and was starting to wonder if I would ever work again. And you took a chance on me and hired me on the copy desk. You took a bigger chance when, out of the blue, I threw my hat in the ring to become a reporter. And I just want to thank you for that. This has been a great sort of second act career for me. And thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this work.
Well, when I identify talent, that kind of benefits me and everybody around me. So, you were easily identifiable, although I think you're the only person that I've ever hired that worked at a golf magazine, a golf catalog or magazine.
I worked for a golf retailer writing mostly catalog copy. I'll save everybody some time. Every brand of golf club hits the ball straighter and farther than every other brand.
And that's one of the really, I think, important thing. That's one of my reputations early on was developing and finding talent, you know, and being able to look at a bunch of a person's clip and say, well, he could do that or that could be repurposed or that way. There's a guy named Kevin Frecking who works for the AP now out of Washington, D.C., covering their big stories. He was from Manhattan, Kansas. That's where K-State is. Mm-hmm. And he sent me a bunch of sports clips. And I said, he can write news side.
Yeah.
And I convinced him to come down here. And it's very hard to convince sports writers to work on a news beat. Because most of them can't see beyond which way the ball bounces. But I convinced him, and he came, and his career has just gone. He's done very, very well, and he never went back to sports.
There you go. Well, good luck. I'm sure you'll be in touch. I'll be calling you for advice. You can come hang out anytime you want and just soak up the newsroom atmosphere.
I meant, one of the things you do in life is you put one foot in front of the other, you know, and this is the foot that I put in front of another, one foot in front of another for a long, long time. And it's going to be really strange next Tuesday to wake up and not have to think about this place. I'm not saying that in a bad way at all. I'm just saying I'm waking up and it's clean. But I'm kind of doubtful that I'll actually wake up that way. I think I'll wake up I wonder what's going on in Texarkana and what's going on here and how you guys are doing.
But, well, let us know if we mess up.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thanks, you guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Carl.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.